Opening God's holy word with reverence and joy. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Struggle with what the Lord is really after from us? What does the Lord desire of us? This is something that is so important that the New Testament is showing us. And here in Mark's Gospel today, chapter 12, we are going to look at a little widow who threw in two mites, whom Jesus fixes his eyes upon and basically says, there it is. See that right there? That's what I'm after. To summarize, it was a heart full, overwhelmed of gratitude for the salvation that she had been given. She loved fervently with a heart that had been changed in response to the grace she had received. She gave back. It didn't matter how much. She gave all that she had because she was poor in spirit. We're going to look at this today on Abounding Grace Radio, hoping that this will give you a good picture of the salvation that Jesus brings and what he frees us up to enjoy in this life. Because our lives are given to so many different desires, ultimately the Lord must change our hearts that he would become the desire of our hearts. We're going to look at that today on Abounding Grace. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. As always, we invite you to visit us on the web at agradio.org. That web address is agradio.org. The phone number is 888-504-8805. 888-504-8805. We would love to hear from you. So here is the message from Mark chapter 12, which I have titled, She Gave Her Whole Life. And this hopefully will help you to understand the marvel of salvation that Jesus has brought to us. And knowing the truth, I pray, dear listener, that all of you are set free. The heart of the problem, I believe, is really exposed in Mark 12 when we have the story of a particular test that is given to Jesus from the Herodians and the Pharisees. What a strange combination, let me tell you. If you look at verse 13, this is what we have. They came to him and they said to him, verse 14, Teacher, we know that you are true and do not care about anyone's opinion. This is utter flattery. For you are not swayed by appearances, but truly teach the way of God. Is it lawful? Tell us. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? It reminds me of the scene in the Hoosiers movie where they all get the new coach in the office, in the barbershop, and they start saying all their victories, and then they stop and they say, tell me, do you play man-to-man or zone defense? If you haven't seen the movie, you would have laughed, but they were trying to catch him. They've dug a pit. They have dug a big pit here for him. Jesus knows this. Listen, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Shall we pay up or shall we not? We want to know. Because you're true. Now, Jesus knows the trap. If he says you should pay, you can't support giving to a kingdom that's not God's, right? That's their thought. Jews were one kingdom guys. You could never do that. They had their kingdom agenda. They were transforming everything. They wanted to. But if they could get him to say, don't pay, they could get the charge of rebellion against Rome, and Rome hated rebellion. Rome hated rebels. They could get him to be done. They could get him done for good, be done with this rebel. I want you to focus on his answer.
bring to me a denarius. They bring a denarius, and he holds it up, and he says, whose inscription is on this? One side would have had a picture of Caesar's head, the other side an image depicting his reign. In fact, if this was Caesar Augustus Tiberius, we know that it said on the coin, the son of divine Augustus, claiming that Augustus was God, by the way. The reverse side generally would show a seated female. And it's in this context, by the way, that Jesus says, render the things to Caesar, the things that are Caesar, and to God's the things that are God's. Now, I did bring my denarius. The kids, I want to you could look, come look at it after. This is a little denarius. It's silver, and it has exactly that. It has a rain depicted on one side, and it has a bust on the other. This is a denarius from that time. And he would have held this up. Jesus would have held it up. They would have put it right in front of him. And can you imagine that? Whose is that? Whose image? Give it to him. Throw it in the pot. But I have something else to say. Render to God's the things that are God's. What did that mean? And what do we render to God? They might have thought the tithe, the law of the tithe, 10%, we give 10%. Problem was, Jesus had money. Money was not on his mind when he talked about rendering to God the things that are God's. If they were not giving to God's the things that were God's, what were they not giving? Well, to answer that, you've got to go back and consider the triumphal entry. The triumphal entry is so important to this whole thing. As Jesus enters into Jerusalem, he comes into Jerusalem, and what is on his mind as he enters Jerusalem? It's the temple. He goes right up into the temple. And he walks into the temple, and the first thing that he gazes and that he sees is in the court of the Gentiles, just packed and swelling with people, 14 acres. It's madness. He finds an entrance, and they are there selling oxen and sheep and doves and money changers, and they're all doing business in there. No worshipers could have brought their own lamb. What was going on for the sacrifices? Well, you had temple places, and you had judges, and the lambs they had to bring were without blemish when they came. And do you think that these policemen and these temple police and these judges approved of what the people brought? I've used the description before. It's like trying to get a permit today. You want to pay up, you can get it. You walked into the temple, there were vendors, there were dealers, there were cattle, there were sheep, it stunk. What do you think happened to the prices? Well, when I go to a sporting event, I don't like paying $8 for a hot dog, do you? They're gouging. People are being exploited, and essentially this is what happened in the temple. A pigeon worth a nickel for the offering would be sold for $4 by these guys, and it had to be the right pigeon, the perfect pigeon. Add to this, every Jew coming into the temple had to pay a temple tax. So you had a temple tax that could only be paid in holy currency. Holy currency were this money that was given and that the Jews accepted. So this is fascinating. In other words, you could never offer up to God a coin with an image of Caesar on it. That's idolatry. So they created their own currency. And lo and behold, some of those currencies were called mites. Well, the money changers would charge a fee for this. You bring in Caesar's, you collect it, they charge a fee, you get some holy money. Everything was done to a T. They would sing the Hallels. They would sing Psalm 118. They would remove the unleavened bread from their homes. They would worship. And look at the hypocrisy that really is going on here. Jesus sees this, and he is utterly filled with wrath. He is filled with wrath. We know from the other accounts, and I've always been amazed with this because it just doesn't fit the depiction and the imagery of this nice Jesus that we have in our culture. He makes a scourge of whips. He binds together long straps, and he comes in swinging. And we read with one of the stronger words in the Greek that he casts them out. He drove them out with force out of the temple. I mean, it's a whip. And then he takes the money bin change and he flips it over on the temple floor. Imagine that. Zeal for his father's house had eaten him up. And now I've always said how we need some zeal today for the Lord's house, don't we? But he said something in the midst of all this. My house, is it not written, my house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations, but you have made it a den of thieves. You're stealing. The entire temple had become a den of thieves. Stealing what? Keep in mind, render to God the things that are God. At the beginning of chapter 12, Jesus tells a parable of these wicked tenants. This man had a vineyard and he leased it to vine dressers. And at vintage time, you'll notice there, he sent for the servants and they threw stones at them and they hurt them and they killed them. You know that. That's the Old Testament prophets. And then he ends the parable by saying, well, I have the owner of the vineyard, of the tenant farmer. The owner of that farm said, I have one son. They will respect my son. They will love my son. And when they saw that the heir had come, they said, come, let us kill him and the inheritance, the money, everything that's involved in this, it'll be ours. They were trying to steal his kingdom, weren't they? And then Jesus quotes in the middle of this, Psalm 118, the stone that the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it's marvelous in our eyes. That's the first theft. The second theft, if you caught it when we were reading originally, is in verse 38. Beware of the scribes. They walk around in long robes. They love greetings. They love to have attention given to them. And they have the best seats in the synagogues. And they love the places of honor. And guess what they're doing? They're going into little widows' houses and they're devouring them. They're stealing. And for a pretense, you know what they do? They make long prayers so that everyone will listen to them and hear them and think, wow, what a pillar of religion. They will receive the greater condemnation. They're stealing God's glory. That's what they're stealing. Kingdom and glory. When you looked at these guys, you would have said, outwardly, they are together. When you looked at these guys, you would have thought, that guy right there, that's what we all need to be. Let me give you one more theft. Render to God the things that are God's. One scribe in the middle of this comes up to Jesus and says to him, perceiving that he is answering well, what is the first commandment of all? Jesus says, here it is. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. That's the first commandment. And the second like it is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other commandment greater than these. So the scribe said to him, well said, teacher, you have spoken truth, for there's one God and there's no other but he. And to love him with all the heart, with all the understanding, with all the soul, with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself is more than all the burnt offerings and sacrifices. Now when Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, you're not far from the kingdom of God. Remarkable scene. What's the greatest commandment? love with all of who you are. Notice that, all. Scribe says, that's right, you got it. I know Deuteronomy 6. And that is more than all burnt offerings and sacrifices. Jesus says, you've got it. Yes, you're exactly right. You're almost in the kingdom. It's one thing to understand what the commandment requires. It's another thing to be able to do it. Love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Let me ask you a question. How are you doing with that one? Do you think you're doing it? If not, you're a thief. How does that make you feel? Can you do it for 5 minutes? All. Well, that would mean then that there are millions of nice people, well-meaning people. If you were standing in front of this nice scribe that day, he was probably the most respectful of all of them. Good guy. We say that a lot. He's a good guy. He's a good guy. Jesus says he's not in. He's answered really well. Do you see the hypocrisy? They're giving tithes, but stealing love. While they dumped their money in the treasury, it wasn't about God, it was about them. While they're giving their money, they ultimately wanted it all for themselves to steal the kingdom for their agenda. It was a system of bondage. They were so concerned about the law. They loved the law. But here was the sad truth. They were not free. And they're stealing from God. Isn't that the one commandment you've always probably sat back from and thought, I'm actually doing pretty good on that one, you know? Isn't it? You have a hard time with the eighth commandment. Well, I'm not really taking, am I? Kingdom, glory, and love. They should have given that to him. You see, the Bible contrasts two different kinds of ministries, and I think this is so important to understand that when the new covenant, and as I read from Hebrews, the new covenant that the Lord is making with the house of Israel was the fulfillment of the promises to Abraham. Paul calls that the ministry of righteousness in contrast with the ministry of death, which was written on what? Stones. And that's important, that contrast that's made throughout the Bible, because each kind of ministry produces its own kind of fruit in its recipient. Nothing exposed this stronger than in Jesus' day when he came upon the Jewish community. It was under the ministry of condemnation, as Paul called it. And the bad tree was bearing bad fruit. The Jewish community was a legalistic, self-righteous club only for those who did the superimposed rules and traditions of the elders. No one could get into the club until there was complete conformity, by the way. Full of self-righteous pride, the Sanhedrin condemned everyone except themselves. The Pharisees would go so far as to criticize Jesus for not washing his hands well before he ate bread, remember? And then Jesus exposed their hypocrisy by making excuses not to give to support their parents. And then he said, "Vain do these people worship me, teaching his commandments the doctrines of men." The Sanhedrin did nothing but fight over all the minute points of the law, and their shepherding proved to be nothing but a heavy-handed yoke of manipulation. They were grumpy. They loved to fight. No joy, no confidence, no hope, no freedom. That's the tragic consequences of a ministry that kills, by the way. Jesus was so different. Jesus was so different. He wanted to secure a joy for people. Render to God the things that are God's. What's God's? Well, if money was not on his mind, the question that I have, if it is, what coin did God ever give that he stamp God's image on and hand to us to give? He never stamped his image on a coin. Render to God the things that are God. Well, what's he talking about? I think you might be able to answer that by asking, where did he put his image? In the beginning, he made them male and female after his own image. He put his image on us. Here were all these image bearers of God running around, stamped with his image, stealing from him. And with all of that, one individual shines in this whole section, doesn't she? Jesus fixes his eyes on one individual as he's, now think of the pressure and the agony he knows. He has to go to the cross. But just before this, this individual shines in this gospel narrative. Unlike a way I've never understood before. Verse 41, now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came in and threw two mites, which make a quadrants. So he called his disciples to himself, and he said, assuredly, I say to you, do you guys see this? I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all of those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she has put in out of her poverty all that she had, her whole livelihood. This little widow comes up in the middle of a system that has been completely corrupted with no liberation. Jesus looks at her. She has nothing. She takes. And by the way, I have these two. I've got two little mites here. You've got to see these afterward. Jewish holy currency from the first century. I want to show these to the boys and girls. She grabs them. How do you think she put them in? Was it like the token buck we throw in when we don't have the tithe? Is that? Was it reluctant? Was it, thank you, Lord? It's really a powerful thought. Jesus ends this section here by saying she gave her whole livelihood. Greek word means life. I'll stay in the bondage. And it breaks our hearts. Believe him. Men ought always to pray and what? Not lose heart. Having this ministry by the mercy of God, we don't lose heart. We do not lose heart, though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed day by day. Let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look for the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal.
Thank you for listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.